Hey, everyone, and welcome to the AEW Double or Nothing After Party here on Sunday night's main event powered by TotalSportCards.com. What an interesting show it was that we just finished watching about half an hour ago, 20 minutes ago, however long it was. It was a very interesting show, and that's what we're going to be talking about for the next hour-ish. It was, a very interesting show, to say the least. I was tossing and turning for, like, you know, a good chunk of that show on whether I actually liked it. And I honestly think that at the end of the day, I'm going to have to go with a thumbs down. Two matches absolutely saved the show for me. And that was the last two matches of the night. But I don't think that overall it was enough to give it that thumb up. Everyone, let me know what you think. Patrons, if you are listening, come online. We're going to be chatting. We're going to be getting your feedback. If you're up here in the stream, I'll get you up and we're going to be talking about things. But yeah, this show, I don't know. It really took a long time for me to get into it. And it just kind of fell flat for the most part. But, you know, as I talk about the show and as I'm joined by Matt, maybe I'll change my mind. So we're going to get to that in a little bit. But again, everyone, thank you for listening to this after party. So we're going to start just running through the show. And we're going to start with the buy-in. The buy-in, AEW always tries to do a little something-something for the buy-in. So the buy-in was hosted by Renee Paquette. Kazim Famuyiwa and Paul White and Stokely Hathaway were the panel. They were on the floor. RJ City was in the back, and he was kind of hyping everything up. So the hosts run through the lineup. Then we get a video package highlighting the Anarchy in the Arena match. We get a clip from Jim Ross's sit-down interview with Don Callis. Callis said he did the hardest thing that a parent or a family member could do. Callis said, "You cut out the cancer." Callis looked into the camera and said, "Kenny, I haven't even started cutting." Arn Anderson was interviewed by RJ City in the backstage area. City said it seemed like Wardlow was playing into Christian Cage's hands by going with the ladder match. Anderson said no one was goaded into the match and played up Wardlow. City asked Anderson if he would be packing heat at ringside. Anderson responds by saying, "Ask your mama." That was that. We got a video package for the Women's Championship match, for the Adam Cole, Chris Jericho unsanctioned match. We then get a quick video on the AEW Tag Team title match. We get the panel again. They're talking about their predictions. Then good old JR comes out, and it's essentially time for the first match of the night, which was Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, and Hook versus Ethan Page, Colton Gunn, and Austin Gunn. So this match, I don't know. I feel like this match went a little longer than it should have gone. It wasn't a bad match, but it wasn't a good match. For matches, if we take a look back at, you know, what AEW typically does on their buy-ins, on their pre-shows, this match, I'd say, is really not at the same level as those matches. And, you know, I was thinking after the match, is this a match? If I didn't already buy the pay-per-view, is this a match that would have made me buy it? And the answer is no. I honestly, you know, based off of this match, would probably not have bought the pay-per-view. But again, you know, that's just my opinion there. So remember, if the Hardys and Hook won, Ethan Page's contract is owned by the Hardys. Short story long, the Hardys hit a twist of fate on the Guns. Page was left alone in the ring with all three babyfaces. The Hardys all performed cutters on Page. Hook locked in the Red Rum, and he got the submission win. So the winners, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, and Hook. So this match, again, it wasn't the worst, but it just wasn't. I feel like it just went a little too long for my liking in the grand scheme of stuff. Also, Jeff Hardy had a couple slips. In fact, one slip they even played a replay of. So to me, that's just weird that they would do that to him. But, you know, here we are with that. But overall, this match just wasn't my cup of tea. And, you know, this unfortunately kind of set the bar for most of the night. So after this, Renee Paquette stands on the stage. She's next to her is a table with the men's and the women's title belts and cup trophies for the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. She introduced Martha Hart, who spoke about how she's happy to be working with AEW and Tony Khan again. She spoke about dressing up for the tournament, and then Tony Khan walks out wearing a fedora that had a tournament logo on. So that was that. Then we get the entrances for the Blackjack Battle Royal, and this leads us straight into the show, of the main show, that is. So the first match that kicked things off here was the Blackjack Battle Royal for the AEW International Championship. So Orange Cassidy was the last person to come in, and he was the champ. And the challengers were Jay White, Juice Robinson, Keith Lee, Dustin Rhodes, Ricky Starks, Brian Cage, Swerve Strickland, Penta El Zero Miedo, Ray Fenix, Kip Sabian, Trent Beretta, Chuck Taylor, Tony Nese, Ari Daivari, Big Bill, Lee Moriarty, Commander, Bandito, The Butcher, and The Blade. So, in terms of battle royals, this wasn't the worst. But I kind of feel like the entire match could have just been summed up until it was the last two people. And yeah, like I really do think that I felt like this match just would have been better served overall, much better if it was Orange Cassidy versus Swerve Strickland from the get-go. And that was the entire match. Having this as a battle royal, I don't know. Nothing really clicked with me. I overall really didn't like this battle royal too much. I know you had some side stories happening, you know, with Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. You also had the Ricky Starks and Jay White stuff still going on. So, you know, it was okay in that sense. But I kind of feel like all of that was just the side story, where the main story at the end of the day, for me at least, was Swerve Strickland versus Orange Cassidy. So Strickland does a top rope double stomp on Cassidy. Strickland put Cassidy's hands inside Cassidy's pockets. The crowd was chanting, "You fucked up." Sure enough, Cassidy hit back-to-back TDTs. Cassidy then hit the orange punch, sent Strickland right over the top, but he remained on the apron. Cassidy went for another orange punch, but Cassidy stuffed it and brought him onto the apron with him. Cassidy backed Strickland into the turnbuckle. Then Prince Nana grabbed the legs of Cassidy, allowing Strickland to gain offensive control for just enough time. Swerve went for a top rope double stomp, but Cassidy put his feet up. Strickland held the top rope with one hand. Cassidy then kicked Strickland's hand, causing him to fall to the mat on ringside to end the match. Orange Cassidy won the Blackjack Battle Royal in 22 minutes, 25 seconds to retain the AEW International Championship. So again, not the worst match, but I feel like this match just would have been much better off with Swerve Strickland and Orange Cassidy as the entire match. That's where that was. All right, then we get a video package set up for the unsanctioned match. The second match was Adam Cole versus Chris Jericho in an unsanctioned match with Sabu as the special enforcer. So, you know how they say that if you have nothing nice to say, you should say nothing at all. It would be a very bad show if I just didn't say anything for the next 15 minutes or so, because this just started a streak of this show where I was just even upset at the fact that I spent $50 Canadian on this show. This match started off a string of really bad matches. So, good part here, Sabu helps clear the Jericho Appreciation Society to leave it to just Adam Cole and Chris Jericho. But I feel like everything else in this match was just not good. The spots were rusty. I felt like, Jericho lost a step overall. I feel like Jericho just couldn't keep up with Adam Cole. I feel like Adam Cole even slowed down to help Chris Jericho. Overall, I just don't think that this match was good whatsoever. You know, it just, it really pains me, but this match was pretty damn bad. Like, really, really bad. So at one point, Jericho pulls a steel chain out from underneath the ring. He handcuffs it to Cole's wrist. Cole put Jericho down with a DDT onto the chain for a two count. Then Cole attached the other handcuff to Jericho's wrist. Jericho tried to run, but Cole yanked the chain and super kicked Jericho. Cole performed a Panama Sunrise for a near fall. Jericho avoids Cole's boom knee. He wraps the chain around Cole's neck. Cole used his feet to push off the ropes and flip over Jericho. Super kicked him twice. Cole followed up with a boom knee. Cole stood up and wrapped the chain around his knee and hit Jericho with another knee to the back of the head. Cole mounted Jericho, starts throwing punches with the chain wrapped around his fist. Cole used his other hand to punch Jericho, who had a bloody eye. And that's when referee Aubrey Edwards called for the bell. And that was that. The announce team tried so hard to explain that Jericho was unable to defend himself. You know, this was after Saraya came out. This was after Britt Baker came out. This was after a bunch of stuff and a bunch of punches and a quote-unquote bloody eye led to, you know, in this unsanctioned match, led to a stoppage where Adam Cole defeats Chris Jericho. So here's the thing about this match. In AEW, where blood is used so much, where violence is used so much to put stories over, and I'm not going to talk against that right now, but having this end in a ref stoppage because the guy wasn't able to defend himself, the guy was bleeding too much, the guy was just whatever, you know, I can't buy it. I couldn't buy it. This was just really, really disappointing for me. And yeah, it's this, like I said, started off a streak of a few bad matches. All right, so the next match was FTR's Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal with Sanjay Dutt, Santnam Singh, and Karen Jarrett for the AEW tag titles with Mark Briscoe as the special referee. All right, so this match, I think overall, it wasn't too bad. It was better than the previous match. I feel like there was just a lot of stuff going on with some of the outside interference, with the eventual expulsion of Santnam Singh and Sanjay Dutt. There was the unnecessary, in my opinion, unnecessary guitar shot to Aubrey Edwards when the ref was down. There was just a lot going on in this match. I feel like this match, if you took out all the stuff in the middle, all the over, quote-unquote overbooking from the middle, and you only kept the very end of this match, which I'll talk about very shortly, I feel like this match would have been much better off. But it is what it is. That's you know, something that we have to be used to with AEW. And again, this match wasn't bad, but I kind of feel like I was expecting a little more. So, FTR performs a Doomsday Powerbomb on Lethal. Wheeler performed a suicide dive on Jarrett. He came up holding his knee. Harwood covers Lethal and was pulled to ringside by Dutt. A little shortly thereafter, FTR hit the big rig on Lethal. And so this was right after Briscoe got hit with the guitar. FTR hits the big rig on Lethal. Harwood had him pinned, but Briscoe was still down. Aubrey Edwards runs out. Sanjay Dutt stood in her way until she pushed him over. That's when Karen slammed the guitar over the head of Edwards. In the ring, Lethal hits a lethal injection on Harwood and Wheeler both at the same time. A short time later, Jarrett hit Harwood with one of the title belts. Jericho hit the stroke on Harwood. Briscoe was woken up and made a very slow count, allowing Harwood to kick out at the very last moment. That's when Jarrett got pissed. He starts taking shots at Briscoe, who eventually just punches him back. Jarrett stumbles into the big rig from FTR and was pinned by Harwood in about 20 minutes. So they retain. again, I just feel like a lot was going on, and I just, the end would have been better served off if a lot of the extra was taken out in the middle. So that was that. All right, in the back, Alex Marvez was with Ricky Starks. Starks started to talk about how he eliminated Jay White and Juice Robinson, but they showed up. They double-teamed him. FTR shows up, and that caused White and Robinson to run away. FTR encouraged Starks to get medical attention. So that was that. All right, we then get a video for the next match, which was for the TNT title, and it was going to be defended in a ladder match. It's Wardlow versus Christian Cage. So for the longest time on the network, on any show, whether it was BAM or the main show, we were talking about, you know, it's crazy to think that Wardlow was in such a strong position. And in the past 365 days, I feel like he is just diminished. He's just a shadow of where he should be and where he was. And I was really hoping, seeing that Christian Cage was going to be in this match, regardless of who won, this is the type of match that would put Wardlow back into that spotlight. It would raise him up back into where he was just 365 days ago. Unfortunately, I don't feel like that was that. I don't know what was happening in this match. I don't know whether Wardlow was just not confident, whether he was nervous, because this was his first ladder match, I think. Well, first one-on-one title ladder match. I don't know whether, you know, he was trying to protect Christian Cage. I don't know what it was. Lack of chemistry. I don't know. But I just feel like something was missing in this match, and everyone was just felt like they weren't sure on what they were supposed to do next. And this match, again, just for me personally, it didn't work. There was a lot, way too many of those, you know, there was that one part where Wardlow jumps from the top rope onto the ladder. And for some reason, I think he forgot how physics works and, you know, expected the ladder to hold him up. But obviously the rungs break, and he has a really bad spill. Christian obviously spills as well. Don't know how planned that was, but it just looked really, really scary. Wardlow does the, Luchasaurus eventually comes out, does what Luchasaurus does to help Christian Cage. Eventually, you know, we end up seeing the spot where Wardlow does a senton bomb off of a ladder on the outside of the ring onto Luchasaurus, who was on a table, and that kind of gets him out of the match. All right, sure. But it just seemed, I don't know, just a lot of things seemed off. You got Arn Anderson biting the fingers of Luchasaurus at some point. Sure, why not? So Wardlow starts to climb one of the very wobbly ladders. Rick Knox stops Wardlow from climbing it. Wardlow was hot and grabbed another ladder. Again, Luchasaurus enters the ring, choke slams Wardlow. Anderson enters the ring. Luchasaurus grabbed Anderson by the throat. And that's when Anderson bites the thumb of Luchasaurus. It was all bloody. Luchasaurus went after Anderson at ringside. Wardlow slammed the chair over the back of Luchasaurus and then laid him on top of the table on the floor. We had two tables set up at this point. Wardlow climbs the tallest ladder in the arena and performs a Swanton bomb onto Luchasaurus while crashing through both tables. Really scary looking spot. Christian Cage returns to the ring and set up a ladder under the hanging title belt. Cage climbed up the ladder, got his hand on the belt. Anderson tipped the ladder so that Cage fell. We then see Wardlow catching Cage and powerbombed him. Wardlow climbs the ladder, pulled the belt down to win the match in 17 minutes, 10 seconds. Your winner and still TNT champion, Wardlow. So, again, whether Wardlow won or lost, I really did feel like this could have been a star-making match, getting Wardlow back to where he was just 365 days ago. And unfortunately, that we just didn't get that. It's very unfortunate, in my opinion. And this, again, was in that streak of just not-so-good matches. So we then get a video package setting up the AEW Women's Championship match. Tony Storm comes out. And this Jamie Hayter comes out. Or Jamie Hayter's music plays. Nobody comes out. Eventually, Jamie Hayter comes out stumbling because the rest of Storm's group beats the living crap out of Hayter. So right away, you kind of knew where this match was going, because no one was really sure whether Jamie Hayter was cleared to wrestle. Even on Thursday's press conference with Tony Khan, he was asked, you know, how's Jamie Hayter doing? And he was very wishy-washy about the answer. All right, so, you know, eventually Paul Turner checks with Hayter, calls for the bell to start the match when she gets dragged back in. Britt Baker ran out, attacked Saraya, and quickly battled to the back. Nice little way of getting, Saraya out of the match. In the ring, Soho removed the turnbuckle pad. Hayter whipped Storm into the referee, who hit the turnbuckle. Hayter covered Storm, and then Turner made a two count. Soho sprayed green spray and paint into the eyes of Hayter. Storm hits Hayter with a hip attack and then covers her for a two count. There wasn't much left here. Hayter just, and she tried doing her finisher, but she couldn't do it because of her shoulder injury. Storm eventually shoves Hayter onto the exposed turnbuckle, follows it up with a Storm Zero, gets the win in only 3 minutes and 5 seconds to win the AEW Women's Championship. So there we go. You know, new champion, Toni Storm. So let's think about this one a little bit, right? You know, I think that at the end of the day, ultimately, what we're seeing right now is the possibility of, we don't know if how injured Jamie Hayter is, but the hope, my hope, at the very least, and listeners can let me know if I'm the only one thinking this, but I think we're going to be seeing the eventual rematch at All in Wembley, in London, for Jamie Hayter to get that big W to recapture the women's title. We'll see what happens. All right, then we get the open house rules match for the AEW Trios titles. It's House of Blacks, Malakai Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews with Julia Hart versus Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed. All right, I have to honestly say the best line of the rap was when they made fun of Buddy Matthews and Dom. I was just dying of laughter there. As for the match itself, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. Again, continues that streak of where things were just up in the air, and I wasn't really sure whether I was enjoying the show, but little by little, it was getting better. This wasn't, you know, on the same level as the Cole Jericho match, which I just did not enjoy whatsoever. Little by little, I think this match was probably up there in the top third of good matches in this entire show. So, you know, King tags in. He completely dominates Bowens. That was the story of this match at the end of the day. King knocked Caster and Gunn off the apron and then performed a cannonball on Bowens in the corner. King had Bowens pinned, but Caster was able to break it up. Black took out Caster. King was able to clear King. And then Matthews from the ring. Black ran in and was kicked away by Bowens, who dove to make the tag. Gunn was pulled off the apron by Black. Matthews was able to work over Bowens for a moment and then leapt from the ropes and was blasted with a super kick. Bowens finally made the hot tag to Gunn, who worked over Black and Matthews. Gunn no-sold a kick from King and gave him a Famouser. Gunn hit another Famouser on Matthews on the ropes. Gunn turned to Black's finisher kick, which led to Black pinning Gunn in 15 minutes, 30 seconds. There you go. There you go. So that was the House of Black match. Again, not the worst, but you know, I have these expectations when it comes to AEW and their pay-per-views, and this one just overall was just a disappointment. So the next match we had was for the TBS Championship. That's Jade Cargill versus Taya Valkyrie for the TBS title. Hold on. Let me copy that. All right. Technical difficulties at its best. All right. So Jade Cargill versus Taya Valkyrie for the TBS title. The entrances were was probably the highlight of this match. As soon as the match starts, Valkyrie went for the Road to Valhalla. Cargo counters it into a failed attempt at Jaded. Valkyrie performs a sliding German suplex on Cargill. Layla Gray grabbed the leg of Valkyrie enough for Cargill to recover knock her to the floor. Little time later, Valkyrie escapes a submission hold, performs a blue thunder bomb for a two count. Cargill comes back, went for a springboard move, and then Valkyrie went for a code breaker. Both women collided hard and crashed to the mat. They got back to their feet and traded forearms. Valkyrie took Cargill down, tied Cargill's legs behind her, picked her up by the arms, and dropped her face first on the mat. Valkyrie covered Cargill for a near fall. Gray climbs back on the apron, takes a swing at Valkyrie, knocks her down. Cargill rolls up Valkyrie for a two count. Taya then comes right back, hits the Road to Valhalla, went for the pin. The referee was so close to getting that three, but just didn't get there. Valkyrie hoisted up Cargill. She slips out, and Cargill throws a kick to the face, hits Jaded, and beats Taya Valkyrie in 8 minutes, 50 seconds to retain the TBS title. And I think that Tony Khan was watching WrestleMania 9, which also emanated from Las Vegas, because after the match, we get a 60-0 graphic appearing. Mark Sterling takes the mic and said that while Cargill is willing to defend her title anytime and any place, there's nobody left. And that's when Chris Statlander makes her entrance, her very surprise entrance, comes right down, and I guess it's time for the match right there, right then. Jade Cargill with Mark Sterling versus Chris Statlander for the TBS title. Statlander took it to Cargill, catches her with a boot to the head. Statlander hoisted up Cargill and held her up, but Cargill caught her with a knee to the head. Cargill then throws a big boot to Statlander's head, sets up for Jaded, but Statlander elbowed her. She then performs an inverted pile driver and gets the clean pin. 60-1. Chris Statlander is now your TBS champion in 48 seconds. Gotta say, it was interesting because it was a surprise, but I really do feel like we were not given that buildup. We were not given that payoff. I know some people are probably saying, hey, you know, Chris Statlander was ready to face Jade Cargill, and this is the payoff. But I feel like they should have just done the return, and hell, even on Wednesday do the match. But with the return, the sudden change, I don't know, this just felt very WrestleMania 9, Yokozuna, Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan. It is what it is, but it's a very personal thing where I wouldn't have done that, right? But I'm sure that there's people up there who kind of like the way that went down. All right. So at the next, and then I completely lost track of time. I look at the clock. I notice that it's what, like 10:30? And I'm like, wow, it's time for the Four Pillars main event. Completely forgot about Anarchy in the Arena. And I'm like, I was getting all happy and I was all hyped. I was thinking that, wow, we're going to get an early end to the pay-per-view. But I was mistaken that we still had two matches to go at this point. All right, so We get a video package setting up the AEW World Championship match. Jack Perry makes his entrance. Shivani said one of his proudest moments in AEW was announcing the Four Pillars match. Sammy Guevara and Tay Mello come out next. They brought back Sammy's signed gimmick. Long story short, they're having a baby. The fans cheered. Some people jeered. Cool. Jack Perry applauded in the ring. Guevara kissed Tay's belly and then kissed her. And that was that. We then get Darby David Lynch video. We get a footage airing of an Elvis wedding with a guy wearing an MJF mask. Darby Allin showed up and hit the MJF mask wearing guy with his skateboard, worked him over with some punches. Long story short, Darby Allin comes out to one of his videos. And that was cool. MJF then comes out. He wore a mask. He sits on the elevated throne, and that throne lowers. He stood up and removed his mask, heads to the ring. Overall, pretty cool entrances. And this sets us up for the AEW World Championship match, the Four Pillars match. MJF versus Darby Allin versus Jack Perry versus Sammy Guevara in a four-way match. So the next couple matches was very, very hard to take notes for. And what I really liked about this match, and I say this match, the next two matches were good to very good to excellent. I really did enjoy the next few matches. Now, what I really liked about the championship match is the fact that, you know, we always talk about the tropes of multi-people match. Where, and this isn't just a WWE thing. I've seen this in so many other promotions where they only focus on two people in the ring, or, you know, they only focus on two people in general, and everyone else is kind of just outside of focus, outside of the camera, chilling, injured, acting injured, what have you. But what I really enjoyed about this match was the fact that for, I would say, the majority of the match, a good portion of the match, or at least that's what it felt like to me, they were all working at the same time. And I really, really did like that. So this match was very fast-paced. All the Canadian Destroyers. We got all the pitting combinations. We had all the topes, tope con heroes, tope suicidas. This match was honestly relatively non-stop from the time that the opening bell rang. It was crazy. So, you know, we see Guevara doing a corkscrew dive onto Perry. Guevara goes up again. He frog splashed MJF for a near fall. Guevara got MJF on the ropes. MJF bit Guevara's forehead. MJF then followed that up by powerbombing Guevara onto his knee and launched them into Perry in the corner. MJF performs a wicked pile driver move on Darby Allin for a very close near fall. Then MJF is obviously going to be MJF. He grabs the mic and he says Guevara has a baby on the way and should just lay down and do the right thing for the money. He needs the money. He's having a baby. He said, think about the baby, Sammy. MJF kind of passes off the mic. Guevara said he's going to lay down for MJF and he's just going to take the money. Guevara lays down in the middle of the ring. MJF went to cover him and he hooked him into an inside cradle for a two count. MJF then stuffs the GTH. He counters it into his own finisher, which Guevara avoided and put MJF in the Walls of Jericho. MJF reached the ropes, but there were no rope breaks due to the style of match. Allin catches Perry in a scorpion leg lock. MJF tees tapping, but Perry stopped them. They escaped the holds, and Allin put Guevara in a figure four. Perry put Allin in a crossarm breaker. MJF applies a submission on Perry, while Guevara put MJF in an ankle lock. The visual of all four guys doing different submissions on each other was awesome. And maybe I'm nitpicking at this point. I don't know. But this visual was something that you can use on social media for years to come. You can use this on videos. You can use this on everything. But in my opinion, what ruined the perfect shot, the perfect scene of the four guys doing various submissions on each other in a four-way match was the referee running around all four guys as if he's Curly from the Stooges. It really took away from the moment. And maybe I'm nitpicking, but it was such a cool visual. I just really didn't like the way that the referee handled himself in this match. But that was that. So at this point, like I said earlier, it's nonstop action. Everyone does a Spanish fly. Guevara, you know, does a Spanish fly on MJF. MJF does one on Perry. Perry does one on Allen. Everyone's down for a little bit. MJF, everyone gets to their feet. MJF pokes everyone in the eyes and flips off the crowd. He runs the ropes and takes a triple super kick. Allen and Perry held MJF while Guevara went to the top and hit him with a leaping cutter. Allen performed a code red on MJF, and Perry blasted MJF with a knee to the back of the head. So this is kind of when the match changed a little bit. And they go from just trying to kick each other's ass and someone gets the win to, we're going to eliminate MJF, and the three of us, meaning Allen, Perry, and Guevara, are going to figure out who wins between us. But at this point, the strategy was eventually getting rid of MJF. So, Guevara clotheslines MJF. They tumble to the floor. Perry ended up with the title belt, and he's looking at it while Excalibur recalled MJF, stating that Perry lacked that killer instinct. And then Excalibur continues to question whether Perry could do what it takes to become champion. Perry throws the title belt down, and he was booed. Allen hooks Perry into a pin for a two count. That's when Guevara returned and hit Allen and Perry with knee strikes. Guevara performed the GTH on Perry. Guevara went up top and was pushed to the floor by Perry. Allen goes up top. MJF slipped the title on top of Perry before Allen landed on Perry with his coffin drop finisher. MJF then covers Darby Allen and pins him to retain the AEW championship in 27 minutes, 50 seconds. What a match. Great match. Really enjoyed this a lot. So this leads us into the main event of the night, which was the Elite, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson versus the Blackpool Combat Club, John Moxley, Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta in an Anarchy in the Arena match. Okay, so last year, I just could not stand the Anarchy in the Arena match. It just wasn't my style. But maybe just because this show just overall wasn't that great. Maybe I was wanting to watch a good match. I don't know what it was. Maybe I was tired. Don't know exactly what it was. But I really, really enjoyed this match. I thought this match was excellent. I thought this was so well done. It was a fun match. Not my typical style of match with the plunder and just craziness and, dare I say, anarchy happening everywhere. But it was a very, very fun and well done match. I think the funniest part of this match was the fact that the house band played Moxley's theme for about 10, 15 minutes. I don't even know how long until the Jacksons, the Bucks, super kicked the lead singer. I thought that was just a funny take and a nice little callback from last year's show where Moxley's theme played over the arena for who knows how long. So this was exactly the type of match that you would think it would be. It was insane. There was violence. Clearly, Moxley was bleeding. Everyone pretty much bled except for Yuta and Castagnoli. This match was so well done. Moxley had and Omega did some insane spots over some barbed wire on one of the poker chips that was in the entrance stage area. Very well done. Castagnoli and one of the Jacksons fought outside. You know, this was a lot of fun. Really well done. So Omega hits and rallies with a V-trigger on Moxley. Danielson catches Omega with a running kick, did the same move to Page. Danielson hooked Omega's arm, beat him with elbows to the side of the head. Yuta and Moxley did the same to Nick and Page. Matt hopped back into the ring, and he somehow, I don't even know how this happened. So Matt Jackson jumps in, and he does some punches to the heels. Yuta low blowed Matt. Moxley then pours tacks into the mouth of Matt, and Cassidy only hit him with an uppercut. Yuta suplexed Matt into a bridge, but Paige broke it up. Omega and Paige had a moment and then opted to fight all four opponents. They got the better of them, and it was capped off with Omega hitting the one-winged angel on Danielson. Omega had the pin, but Yuta broke it up. Shivani said he's seen a lot of shit, but not like this. Omega and Paige hit a series of moves on Yuta. Paige went up top, dove on to everyone else. Callis then stands up. Yuta ended up with the screwdriver that Callis hands to him, and he hits Paige with it. Omega ducked it and hit Yuta with a V-trigger. Omega sets up Yuta for his finisher. That's when Callis enters the ring. Omega dropped Yuta, turns and puts the focus on Callis. A man dressed in black entered the ring with a hat on. Callis dropped to the mat, and then the masked man hit Omega with a knee to the head. The man unmasked, and it was revealed to be Takeshita. Yuta grabbed the screwdriver, hit Omega with it, and pinned him to give the Blackpool Combat Club the win in 27 minutes. After the match, Callis took off his belt, chokes Omega with it, holds up Takeshita's arm, and all the BCC members celebrate. And what I really liked about the ending to this match is the fact that they, you know, they didn't flat out say that Takeshita and Callis are with the Blackpool Combat Club. I don't think they will be. I think that's kind of like the nice little swerve part of the story that we're going to get. But, you know, they were trying to tease whether Takeshita and Callis are part of the BCC. And that's the hook, pun intended, for watching Wednesday's show. So there you go. Again, excellent match. Very well done. There was an exploding super kick at some point. You know, the visuals of this match were great. Super well done. As crazy and hectic as it was, you know, it was a relatively easy match to follow. I like this. And, you know, I think that this match and the previous match, the Four Pillars, four-person match, saved this show. But I still think that overall, if we're taking a look at this, those two matches weren't enough for me to give this that thumbs up. Now it's time to hear from all of you. So just remember, if you are a patron, you have the link in your mailbox. Use that link if you want to come and chat. Otherwise, just keep watching on social media. Keep listening to the podcast. You do you. Enjoy yourselves. But I believe we do have someone on. Tom, are you ready? Just give me a thumbs up because I can see you. Let me know if you're ready to come on. All right. Hey, Tom.
So, as you can see, I did not watch it at home. I watched it at the movie theater. So, I got a little bit of a different vantage point of it all.
Yeah, let's hear about it. So, I need to ask, how full was the movie theater?
Not very full at all. It was very surprising, but there must have been maybe 10 to 20 people there. So there was a okay crowd, but it's not like when you used to go there for like WrestleMania and everybody's lined up outside and it's packed and all that. So yep. I saw a lot of storytelling in like all the matches. Like, I don't know if they're gonna be able to fix Warlow, but they just, if they want to, they just have to make him a unbeatable kind of guy, right? And you can't just do that in one night against Christian Cage, who probably should not be wrestling at all anyways.
That's the thing. I was kind of thinking about that, right? Like, I'm like, oh, man, Christian Cage, you don't know how his body is. You don't know how his shoulder is. You don't know how his neck is. I was a little nervous, especially seeing how uncomfortable Wardlow looked in that match. Like, there was just something about that where I was just very nervous for Christian at the end of the day. And I was, you know, maybe it was, I don't know, maybe I was too much of an optimist to think that, you know, this match could have just, dare I say, rehabbed Wardlow, but it just didn't work out.
Right. So, but my thinking about Christian Cage is that his best work would be in the back, right? People talk about nobody knowing how to do a promo and stuff. Like, yep, that's the kind of stuff he should be able to sit down and do on a weekly basis.
I think, you know what, I agree with that, and who knows if he does do stuff like that, right? But I feel like he would be best used as a manager as well.
Yeah, I could see that, to build up
or someone like that, right?
Right, to build up the dinosaur.
Yeah, Luchasaurus.
Right, because he's also been thrown aside. So what I liked the best was the Pillars match.
Yep.
It was just nonstop action. And the added bonus of like MJF being able to do what we've seen Chris Jericho do in the WWE, and you've seen probably Kevin Owens do, and maybe a few others, and that is basically talk during the match, and you can hear him talk, right? Like, you could hear him say, no, don't do that. Stop, I'm not ready.
Yeah.
All through the match, and that just added something to that match.
Right. Now, so I have to ask you, all right, so MJF is still champ. Who is his next opponent? Who do you think he's going to be going up against?
It's probably going to be one of the four. I don't know which one it's going to be, but like it could none of them have really been pushed or been given the platform that MJF has. MJF has been given a platform. He may not wrestle, but he's on TV every week. He's talking every week. People can see him. People can boo him. Just like tonight, people could cheer him, right? Like, Karen Jarrett was like the biggest heel of the night.
Yeah, with she the really
beep, bleep you, Karen stuff going on. And then during the trios match, you also had the Who's Your Poppy one for Buddy Murphy. So yep. I like those things. So I guess out of the three, I still think Darby Allin may be the biggest fan favorite out of the three.
Yep, I agree.
So that may be where you want to go. I don't know what Sammy Guevara is going to do. I'm very happy for the family because they've been basically bleeped on for the last basically 18 months. So it's nice that they have something nice. Just like it was nice to see Statlander come back and win the title. And now all you have to hope is that she doesn't get injured. Right, because in the last 3 years, she's basically been in rehab more than a wrestling ring.
Yeah.
Right? She comes back, and all of a sudden, she has to go again.
And that's the thing, right? So like, but it's good to know that, you know, that the powers that be, Tony Khan or whomever made the call, like, they trust her enough that, hey, you know what? It's cool. It is what it is, and we're gonna trust you with the TBS Championship. We'll see what happens. So that's that. So Tom, last question before I let you go: Would you give this pay per view a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
I give it a thumbs up. I I did like the storytelling. I did like the matches. They may not be on par with other AEW pay-per-views, but I guess the atmosphere I liked, and there's bits and pieces of every match I can go and I can say I liked those kind of things, right? And we're still going to get more Chris Jericho and Adam Cole on Wednesday.
Right? Rob, yeah, so, well, yeah, they have the tag match, right? The mixed tag match. Yeah.
Right? That's good. They're great wrestlers, and I don't know what Soraya can do, but I know Britt can do quite a bit.
Yep.
So it should be a good match on Wednesday, and we'll see where this all goes. They seem we have a lot more money coming in, so hopefully that will help them compete against the WWE, and we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, right? Like I was talking about on the main show, this is a very important summer for AEW. Every summer is important, but I feel like this summer especially, there's a lot on the go, a lot of eyes on them with Collision, the possibility of CM Punk coming back with the Wembley show, the quick turnarounds. Like, you know, we have a pay-per-view here in Toronto in only, what, 3-4 weeks? So we'll see what happens. Tom, thank you so much. Always a pleasure chatting on these after parties with you.
Thank you, Boris. Have a good night.
You too. All right, so joining me right now is my tag team partner, good old Matt. Hey, buddy. You're on mute.
Hey! Bonjour. What's up, my friend?
How's it going? How's your evening going?
Oh, pretty well. You know, I got a couple beers in me, got a late night coffee going, ready to talk about this here AEW Double or Nothing 2023. I feel like until the last two matches, this was the worst AEW pay-per-view I've ever seen. And yeah. Then it was a two-match show. It was a WrestleMania 10. But yeah, I don't know. I listened to a little bit of the podcast while I was getting going here. So good job, my friend. Covered it pretty well. I think I'm just going to quickly run through everything. So Battle Royal, it was awesome. It was actually one of the best Battle Royals I've ever seen in my life.
We're going to do a hard 30 on that one because I need to.
Let's do it.
I need to know what was so good about this. Nothing mattered until the last two.
Well, I thought that they had a bunch of good upper mid card characters in AEW, good wrestlers doing good things. I liked Rey Fénix and Penta. It is pretty ridiculous that Jay White got thrown out like in the middle of this battle royal, and he was kind of like the biggest star in New Japan 6 months ago. That's kind of weird, right?
But okay,
I don't know.
Jay White in this battle royal hurt my soul and any adrenaline that could have been in it.
Fair enough. No. I just thought like the storytelling in the battle royal, the final two with Orange v Swerve, I thought was really, really good. I just thought that was a top-notch battle royal, top five of all time, perhaps. Again, a very low bar, of course. But I liked it.
Yeah.
They're still there.
I'm listening. What else you got for me?
So Battle Royal, good match, borderline great Battle Royal. Then we had Adam Cole versus Chris Jericho. What was happening with this match? This was a bad wrestling match between two good wrestlers. I feel like Jericho had a bad day at the office, and he's flirting with Bray Wyatt territory, this Chris Jericho, man. Like,
it's
everybody
so funny.
Who he wrestles is worse off.
It's funny that you say that, because like there's a lot of the meme wrestling groups literally compared this match to Bray Wyatt, Seth Rollins. Like, it's funny that you say that. I don't know. Honestly, maybe they don't have chemistry. I don't know what's going on. But this match just honestly just did not work for me. And I think this was the low point of the pay-per-view, but it was really, it took, what, 2.5 hours for them to climb out of it?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, so it was like a rare bad match, like actively bad match on an AEW show. Tag team match kind of saved it along, like old school. I love Karen Jarrett as part of this group. Sanjay Dutt with the pencil and stuff. So yeah, Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, obviously losing to FTR. They kind of got the ship back on the seas, as it were. And then Wardlow versus Christian Cage, I feel like it just capsized again. Did Arn Anderson bite the Luchasaurus's thumb off? Do I have that correct? Did I see that?
That's what they were going for, my friend. That was a thing.
So it's just like Arn Anderson just like looking like a Saw movie in the corner while there's a title match going on. Like, what in that? What was that Lucha Underground shit in the middle of this random packing ladder match? Like, I did not get that at all. Just, yeah, the opposable thumbs of the Luchasaurus have been gnawed off by the enforcer, Arn Anderson. So, yeah, that was a weird match. And then, obviously, Jamie Hayter's injured, so Tony Storm just, like, gets the AEW world title. I almost think that what they did with the Jade Cargill thing, they should have did Chris Statlander wins that title instead.
That's the weird part, right? That you had someone who's legitimately not going to be around, most likely, who probably couldn't compete, and they still put her through something. And then, you know, it's just very confusing. I don't know. And I still feel like they took something out of Chris Statlander for her not giving her the time. Okay, like, they gave her the moment. But now what?
Exactly. Like, and we will see what the follow-up is. I guess that's in Tony Khan's hands. But, I mean, historically, the follow-up for AEW champions hasn't always been the best, I feel like that's safe to say. One AEW champion, a group of champions that are doing well, the House of Black. I actually like this match, House of Black versus the Acclaimed and Father Ass Billy Gunn. The crowd was dead for it, but I personally liked it. I would say that was a good match. The Jade Cargill versus Taya match was good as well. Taya hit her hard. I really liked Jade's selling in that match. I think it kind of, it's a little bit of a waste of Jade Cargill's title reign to have her lose it in 1 minute in her second match of the night. That's kind of weird. It's, again, like, sometimes Tony Khan is half pregnant with some ideas. I feel like if you're going to do the Ultimate Warrior Honky Tonk Man thing, just do it. Just book a match where it's one-on-one, Jade Cargill versus mystery opponent, and then it's Chris Statlander, because you give Jade Cargill this out now, and then it kind of puts an asterisk on Chris Statlander's entire run off the bat, right? Like, she didn't really beat Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill already had a hard-fought match, right? So it kind of is a waste of 60-0, in my opinion, just a little bit. Like, they could have done something with the 60-0 that really pushed a new character to the next level, and I don't think they did that.
But that's kind of the thing, right? Like, not only did they kind of take Chris Statlander's return and, okay, just throw the belt to her. Cool. Again, out of everyone on the roster, she deserved it, and she was probably going to be the one to dethrone Jade Cargill. But I also feel like that L could have been a huge, huge deal, right?
1,000,000%. Yeah, that one in 60-1, which AEW kept saying over and over, despite the fact that it's a Paul Heyman line and they just aped it from WWE. But anyway, like, that was a very important W, and Chris Statlander will be helped, I'm sure, greatly by it. But I don't know, the way it happened, it kind of felt anticlimactic. Like, I felt like it hurt both people a little bit, just in terms of what it could have been. Yep. Anyway, still, Chris has that title now. That's dope. Glad to see the Long Island Alien back. And then the last two matches were dope, and they saved the show straight up. If you like the violence, you probably like the main event. If you like the hard hitting, the bloody style, and if you like the slick spot fest kind of style, you probably like the penultimate match, the four-way, the four pillars match. But I thought both were great. Probably I actually prefer the violent style, I actually think that the four corners match was better. I actually liked the four pillars match the most on this show. But those two last matches saved it.
Oh, the 100%. You probably heard me talking about that. Like, the last two matches, but a two-match card, it just, for me, it just wasn't enough to give it that thumb up. No thumbs in the middle, up or down. And I'm going to have to go down on this one. How about you, Matt?
Slightly up, although Like you, I'm not necessarily sure I got my money's worth on the transaction, you know, although I guess at the end of the day, like, yeah, okay, you got me. Like the last two matches were bangers, arguably classics, but getting there, it was a rough road this week for AEW, surprisingly so. But you know, Forbidden Door's coming, All In's coming, All Out's coming. You can't all hit home runs. Not every single at bat is going to be a grand slam.
Agreed 100%. And that's the thing, right? Like my expectations are always very high on the pay-per-views, so I feel like this one just swung and missed, and it is what it is. All right, Andre, I'm gonna bring you up. If you are ready, just give me a thumbs up. If yeah, all right. Oh well, I guess I need to actually hit the button. Hey Andre, how's it going?
I'm good, how are you boys?
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Very well. Nice to see you, man. How did you enjoy the card tonight?
I enjoyed it overall. Like it let me down in points, as you've been saying, that like some of it was just meh. Like the middle part of the show. Like I enjoyed the opener, the Battle Royal. I really did. I enjoyed the Adam Cole Jericho match up until the end. I thought that ending was just so underwhelming to me. And then it kind of just went downhill for a good portion of the pay-per-view until it came back with, I feel like, Chris Statlander's win, and it went into two amazing matches, in my personal opinion.
Yep. That's exactly what it was for me, right? And the thing, so going back to the Jericho Cole ending, you know, and I'm going to repeat myself. Like, what really disappoints me about this ending is the fact that AEW loves their violence, loves their blood. You had the main event, and that's how you end the match. Like, remember back in SummerSlam 2006 or 7 or whatever it was, when Edge and Matt Hardy, they did that?
Matt ending? Hardy, yeah.
That one at least had blood.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that neither bled, like I'm not a big fan of blood in professional wrestling, but in a match like that, it requires bleeding. It requires somebody being gashed open, and it didn't hit for me. And like, I was kind of hoping to see Jericho go over to continue the feud forward. Cause I thought like it's been a month and a half build. That's it.
Yeah.
Just kind of hoping for more, but it's AEW. They don't usually continue.
Yeah. But they're clearly going to continue it, right? At least into Dynamite. So who knows what the overall plan is there. But like, okay, let's focus on the really positive stuff. The last two matches, that Four Pillars match, so good. What I liked about it was just action. And for the most part, it was at least three people, sometimes four of them, in the ring at the same time, which is so rare.
Yeah. Very much. So I enjoyed it. Didn't feel like a regular triple threat or fatal four match. It felt different because everybody was constantly being involved. And if somebody was out, they weren't gone for very long, other than the MJF being taken out spot. People weren't in and out as like quickly. So it didn't feel like somebody was missing from the match really at any time. So that was very nice to see. And I kind of wanted to see Jack Perry hit him with the belt, or maybe I was thinking he might have laid down. I was thinking he might lay down for MJF to get the heel turn there and take the money, but he didn't. I was like, I need them to pull a trigger on him and do something different with him.
A lot of people are saying that. Like, that was a lot of people's thought process, that it was Jack Perry was going to be turning heel tonight, just because that's been the story, right? Does he have what it takes? Does he have that attitude? Can he get that attitude? Does he have a spine? So we're weeks away from Forbidden Door. We have no idea what's going to be happening on that card. And you, of all people, I wanted to ask you, were you expecting any stardom on this show?
Not on this one. I don't even know if we're going to get, other than maybe Mayu Iwatani, I don't think we're going to get much for stardom on Forbidden Door. Like, honestly, because they have stuff booked around that time. I can see them sending a couple people over, but I don't think it's going to be your major players, which really sucks. Yeah. I think Mayu Iwatani has that title to come over and do something, but that's about it from stardom, at least.
Yeah, I was expecting something, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I you know, I don't want to say blame, but this Matt set up this expectation that I didn't even think about stardom until we recorded BAM on Friday. I'm like, that would be awesome.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just starting to listen to BAM right on my way home here. I was at the bar watching it, so awesome. Yeah.
Matt.
It's a fun experience watching it at a bar with people because everybody's kind of rowdy from drinking and having fun. So it kind of makes a really good atmosphere because everybody reacted pretty well to most of the show. There were some, again, down points in the middle, but yeah, it was still really good. But like the main event, I love the way it ended with Konosuke because I kind of feel like they're going towards blood and guts with these two teams. And Konosuke will be, I think Konosuke will be part of their team. I don't know if he'll be an official member. And I think we're going to get Kota Ibushi out of it.
That's what I was thinking, you know, and that's why I'm wearing my golden lover shirt. But that's literally what I'm thinking. I think with Takeshita there, I think we are 100% going to be seeing Ibushi at some point, most likely Forbidden Door. And again, you'll hear this on at some point because we talk about this on BAM, and that's the possibility of, look, we don't know how well Collision tickets are selling. Do they need a blood and guts either the night before or the Dynamite right after, or one of the two shows in Hamilton? Do they put blood and guts there?
Yeah, it's very possible because, again, I from looking, they still are like I know for Edmonton at least, they still haven't finished selling the bottom bowl. Like, there's still large sections not sold that are on the can, like shots of the camera would see. There's large sections that still aren't sold, and I don't know what Hamilton is, but like, they really got to push that because, again, you don't, especially for like Collision. I'm selling what, week two in Toronto?
Yep.
Yeah. So you really want that to be a full venue. You might need it. You might need it that night. You don't know.
That's my theory, right? Like, I do think that might be the selling point. That might be what how they get people to go. And I think that'd be just very smart, right? Just two match card, something hour one, and blood and guts. And if that's what happens, then, oh man, we're in for something. Because a blood and guts match live, again, it's better on TV, but there's just something to be said about being there. Last year in Detroit, it was so much fun. So last question before I let you go. MJF, who is his next opponent?
Well, I was thinking Adam Cole is going to continue with Jericho, but I can see it being Adam Cole at All In. I think he's going to have somebody from New Japan. I'm not totally sure. I'm not 100% sure who it's going to be, but they're going to have somebody versus him at Forbidden Door. I'm just not sure. Like, I've been trying to rack my brain who it would be, but
even for the IWGP, right? Like, who is Sonata going to be on the card? Like, what are you thinking?
Well, there's always possibility of doing champion versus champion, but I think that hurts both champions in the end. So I think each one needs to defend his title, kind of like last year.
Yeah. Agreed. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Could it maybe you get MJF Okada? That would actually, I think, would be the biggest match you could sell an MJF match with, at least.
That's okay. Look, I know that match would be incredible, but I can't wrap my head around MJF and Okada. I just really can't. There's something about that, says the guy who wants Umino and Okada, right? Like,
yeah, true.
Matt, what are you thinking? Do you think MJF and Okada could sell some tickets?
That would be very, very interesting match for MJF. He's been so vocally against New Japan. Whenever he brings it up, he's basically like, this wrestling is trash and like, I don't like it. And I think it would be quite interesting to see him against anyone in New Japan. I've been pushing for MJF versus Ishii because they're like the polar opposites on the spectrum of professional wrestling. But I don't know if that would sell very many tickets. I think Okada versus MJF could very easily main event that Forbidden Door show and be like a worthy main event for sure.
Yeah, that would be definitely very cool. Very cool. Oh man, we're gonna I over the next few weeks, I just can't wait, especially this week, as you know, we don't know what's really going on. I think all of our brains are just going to be on that fantasy booker button and seeing what we can come up with for Forbidden Door, because it's literally 4 weeks away at this point.
Because like, I don't think you're going to see much set up tomorrow on Wednesday because being Dominion's next weekend. But you're going to see it, I think, coming up that Wednesday after is when you're going to see a lot of the Japanese guys start to appear in AEW.
Well, here's the thing, right? So Kenny Omega, he's already got a date set for Forbidden Door, right? It's either going to be Archer or Will Ospreay because that match is happening at Dominion, right? Mm-hmm. So there we go.
But to me, but I have a feeling it's they're going to pull the trigger on Archer because they want to save Ospreay to be the all-in match.
Look, it makes sense, but if I'm not getting Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay and Aussie Open and FTR, I'm just going to sell my tickets. I'm just going to sell my tickets. Matt, you want them?
Yeah, that'd be a big blow for you guys. Jesus.
Just kills me. Kills me.
Hopefully I get Fletcher at least.
Yep. That's really what I'm hoping at this point. That's what I'm really, really hoping. I do hope I at least get Fletcher. He's been doing a lot of singles anyways, right? So I hope that happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man. So thank you so much. We'll chat. We gotta chat we'll chat once you watch the Best of the Super Finals.
Oh god, I'll be watching that tomorrow as soon as I get home from work, man. I can't wait to watch that.
All right. Send me a message when you're done. There's a lot to discuss.
I will, sir.
Awesome. Take care, man.
Have a good night, my friend.
You too. All right. So technical issues continue to hurt Matt. I guess his computer died, but that's okay because I think that we are done at this point. So unless there is anyone out there that still wants to chat, who is MJF going to face? You can help me fantasy book Forbidden Door. And we can just chat some pro wrestling in general. But I think that is done because it is already 1:30 in the morning here on the East Coast. Well, Eastern Time Zone, not the East Coast. I know the Smack Daddies always get offended when I call Toronto the East Coast. But it's, you know, let's be honest, it's the East Coast for me. All right, so keep it locked in here on SNME Radio because we are going back at it. And we're starting the routine yet again. So the main show is up there. We broke what we called the forbidden window as we had the gents of Poison, Rana on, Brayden, and Davey. And we were chatting all things NXT. And just remember that Matt and I are actually going to be watching and talking about NXT on a special aftercast, the aftercast. And that should be out at some point Monday. We're also going to get the straw. And Brad is going to be with our little version of Jack Tunney, Brady. And that's going to be a very fun show. I think that they have a very good show that they'll be chatting about. We also have, you know, Steve Swift doing the NXT review, the NXT TV review. We will have an MLW Fusion show this week. We have the Smack Daddies. We have the Rampage Ramble, I think, will be coming back next week. And we'll talk about how we're going to be handling Collision. We have just so many shows. We have a new show, Impactful, with Eric, and he's going to be chatting and reviewing Impact each and every single week moving forward. So again, we're still going to be talking about all these things on BAM, but we're going to give you Cole's notes or a summary of things rather than going blow by blow like we used to. So that's going to be awesome. So again, here on SNMEradio.com, if you are up, if you're a patron, thank you so much. And if you want to be part of these shows, send us your feedback. Get every single show that we produce, including the uncut, unedited, longer version of the flagship show. Go to patreon.com/SNME Radio. Thanks everyone so much for listening. Honestly, always a fun time to chat with people, to see what's going on, and to fantasy book and just chat wrestling. It's always a good time. So on behalf of the entire SNME crew, powered by TotalSportCards.com, thank you so much. And remember, stay tranquilo.